Hello again, and welcome to our companion podcast to our two quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine and In Noosa Magazine. The summer issues will be on the streets very soon, and our team will then get stuck into working on the autumn issue for next year. If you would like your business or your brand, your name to be part of these exciting and much-loved publications, then reach out to our team. You'll find us on Facebook and on Instagram. All right, on with today's episode. Today's guest has worked as part of the production team for some of the world's biggest films and television shows. From Harry Potter to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, starring Johnny Depp, to The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. They're some pretty big names. These days, he's helping people from his Doonan home with skills honed while on set as a makeup artist. Everyone has a story. And today I'd like you to meet Michael Creel from Scalp Micro Pigmentation Noosa.
Whereabouts in New Zealand did you grow up?
Oh, I grew up in Auckland, so that's where I spent all my formative years, I guess.
Yeah.
Auckland, yeah.
When you were a kid, what did you dream of doing? What did you want to do?
Well I always did art, you know, that was one thing I was seemed to be good at and really enjoyed, just like drawing. And I remember even like being at primary school, other kids used to say, oh, can you cut our aeroplanes out for us, because you do a good job. And we tried to get our other friend David, you know, to cut the aeroplanes out for us. You know, these were the balsa wood aeroplanes we used to make and fly.
Yeah.
And I always used to seem to get the job of doing that.
You had a steady hand.
I had a steady hand and did a good job. And I guess that's, yeah. And I was enjoyed drawing and painting. And
was there a style of art that you enjoyed drawing? Because I know from my son, he went through period, he's 13, but going back, say, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, it was all about Japanese anime.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, so he kind of progresses through these different styles and stages. Did you have a style that you admired?
I've always been, funny enough, like drawn to like Japanese style, and I mean I've got obviously some Japanese tattoos, and that's always been a bit of an influence. I always like the simplicity and the I guess the kind of graphic portrait kind of style. And
yeah, the other thing that I like about the anime stuff is the colour. I was told when I was very young that I was colourblind, which I don't know if that's true, but bright colours, yellows, reds and blues always really stood out to me, so I actually always connected with those colours.
Oh yeah, what colour's your telephone? Because someone's telling me a story about her husband being colourblind, and it was like he would come back and the cover on his new iPhone was like pink, and she'd go, whoa, it's pink, and you go, no, it's not pink.
Well, I don't know if you've heard it, but I was told I had like a red and green problem. And I was only very young when I remember, well, my vintage, you used to get the school nurse come round and they give you the colourblind test. And she cut me down really early because she said, oh, you'll never be a pilot, an electrician or a policeman because you can't see reds and greens. And I thought, but I can see the traffic lights.
Yeah.
But still to this day, colours, bright yellows, blues, reds, they're always really quite appealing. And if I look at artwork, they're the ones that stand out to me. They're really, the primary colours, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And the other thing about art and drawing and having kids, can you remember, because I remember when my son, he won second prize in a primary school art competition, and he won like $5 or $10.
Yeah.
And that moment when it dawned on you that you could earn money from the artwork that you created, do you remember your first time, Michael?
I can't remember my first time making money out of art, but I can always remember my parents going, oh, you know, he's good at art, but he'll never make any money out of it. Because, you know, and artists, they don't make any money till they're dead. That's when they become, you know, chance of being come famous or their paintings sell for a lot of money is after they've died. So
what did your parents want you to do?
And
what kind of work did your mum and dad do?
Oh, my dad was a real estate agent, funnily enough. And my mum, she managed some gift shops, and she was quite art. Both of them actually were quite arty, and they could draw pretty well. But my mum in particular, my dad had kind of a little bit more of a rougher style. But
did he want you to do real estate?
No, I don't actually really know what he wanted me to do. I think he wasn't a kind of pushy guy. But
he knew he didn't want you to do art.
He didn't think there was a future in it. And yeah. Then even when I was at school and I had a friend who was, he was going to be a hairdresser, and my dad was, oh, you don't want to be a hairdresser. And then when I started working on films as makeup and all, he was like, oh, he was very dubious about that, whether it was going to be successful or not. So,
was there a tipping point? I know my parents were the same with me. I was quite introverted when I was young, and so when I said I wanted to get into radio, you know, I remember my mum saying, oh, why do you want to do that for? That's silly. You're very quiet.
Yeah.
But then, you know, once I got to Melbourne and I had done my 3 years in the country and all that kind of stuff, their attitude changed. Do you remember a moment then when your parents went, oh, yeah, Michael might make something of this career path?
I guess not a particular moment, but I guess once when I started working full-time on some big films and TV shows, they kind of thought, oh, yeah, there's something in this. He's you know, now making a good living, so that was obviously made them happy. Yeah.
Well, tell me about this transition now, because I don't think out of everybody that I've interviewed, I've never had anybody that's worked in the area that you have in entertainment and film and TV. How did it happen? Was it well? Let's follow that pathway. After school, is it a trade? Is it a work experience? How did you get that foot in the door, Michael?
All right. When I finished school, I did a songwriting apprenticeship. And that was in the days when it was all brushwork. There was no computers. It was all hand lettering. And so I did quite well with that. I did win a couple of awards for that, which, actually, speaking of making your parents happy, they were quite proud of that.
Yeah.
But then it all started to turn to computers and all that. And, you know, sitting on a computer all day is just, it's not quite the same, you know, and it's... the artistic kind of side of what songwriting used to be, kind of.
Yeah.
Even though you can still create amazing things, but it's not quite the same as when you have a brush in your hand. So I was always like, oh, what could I do? I was living over in England at the time. My girlfriend was a hairdresser, and her mum worked in the theatre. So I would just go along. She'd go along. She'd do a bit of hair, and I was there, and it was like, oh, I can paint and I can draw, so I just ended up doing some makeup on some of the actors.
Some theatre performers.
Some theatre performers, yeah. And it was nothing that I really kind of was intending to do. It was just like, oh, yeah, this is a bit of fun, I can draw. And we do some like skulls and face painting and all this. And I was just thought, oh, yeah, this is a bit of fun, I enjoy it. And all the theatre, you know, characters there you meet, and it was a good laugh.
Did you have a bit of creative license in terms of the kind of, you know, characters and the makeup that you were applying?
Yeah. That's one thing. You've always pretty much had that. But yeah, sometimes you get a director who would want something particular and go, oh, you know, that witch is looking a bit green.
Yeah. I imagine that. I mean, you're telling me this transition and what you did. You from signwriting, is that hard to go from a signwriting, which is a hard kind of flat surface, I presume, which would be the what you would do day to day in that occupation, to actually painting someone's. Is that a difficult transition from that to that, or did it come quite easily for you?
I found that kind of came quite easy, just kind of being arty, and that wasn't a difficult transition. I had a few friends and. When we'd have a Halloween party, I'd paint them up, or some of my friends' girlfriends, you know, they said, oh, yeah, here, try some doing some makeup on me and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite enjoyed that transition, really.
So you're working with your hairdresser girlfriend at the time in the UK. Yeah. Is it London, I presume? You're working in London?
Yeah.
What happens after this? You think I can make a living?
Well, no, I didn't think that, but that just kind of put this idea in my head. And then when I went back to New Zealand... We were back in New Zealand, and there was this. I saw this ad in the local paper for a film and television makeup course, and I was going, "Oh, film and television makeup—that would be quite a good course to do.
Yeah.
And cut a long story short, I ended up doing that course. And while I was on the course, I met the lady who was the makeup designer for Hercules. It was Hercules, the legendary journeys with Kevin Sorbo, which at the time was like the number one TV show in the world.
Yeah.
And the shoot of that was Xena, Warrior Princess. She was a Kiwi.
Lucy Lawless.
So anyway, cut a long story short.
You to cut the story short, Mike. I'm happy for you to talk about it. I mean, these are great stories.
Yeah, well, they were doing body painting, and they were all these Amazon warriors and body painting. They wanted them all caked in mud with kind of tribal designs, and the makeup designer at the time, an Australian lady, asked me if I'd come along and be keen to do some of those, and so I drew some designs, and then we went ahead and did those. And I still had a little sign design and graphic design business going. And they would have like big days, and every time they had a big day, they would ring me up, "Are you available to work tomorrow?"
Yeah.
And because I was working for myself, I could always say yes. Yeah. I can come in.
The best of both worlds.
Yeah. So it just kind of progressed from that. So instead, I'd get started off with like one day every couple of weeks, and then it started to be 2 days, and then the next thing it was 3 days a week, and then it was like 4 days a week, 5 days a week sometimes, and so I was busy all the time pretty much doing that then. And and they liked me because I was always available, and if there was no work the next day, that suited me fine. I had plenty to do.
And parallel to this, were you still painting or drawing and doing your art as well?
Yeah.
Still, I guess if you're creative, you're still kind of dabbling, whether it's after, at night or in the morning or on weekends, you're still doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
You showed me into your office, and you've got a whole stack of posters.
Yeah.
Big blockbuster films from, like The Hobbit and Harry Potter and things like that. While we're still in NZ at this stage, is that where, because Peter Jackson, who was responsible for The Hobbit, is that where you started working on that film, or was it a trip to LA first? Like, how did that come about?
No, the first big film I worked on was Vertical Limit.
Okay.
And that was like 8 months work down in Queenstown.
Right.
We got put up down there and would helicopter to work every day up the mountain in the snow, and we went to Mount Cook. We went all around Glen Orchy up the top of those 5,000 foot cliffs, and we'd sit there and we'd film all day, and that was great. That was a great job. That was the first big film that I ever worked on. Yeah.
I don't know the film. I'm guessing it was. Did it have Keanu Reeves in it?
No, it wasn't.
Who was in that one?
It had Chris O'Donnell.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Who became Robin?
Bill Paxton.
Late Bill Paxton.
Robin Tunney, the late Bill Paxton. Wow. Yep. And Scott Glenn and Temuera Morrison was in that as well.
Yeah, right.
Steve Lamarcard.
So this was, even though you said it was filmed in
Queenstown.
Queenstown. This sounds like a big Hollywood film, big budget film.
Ben Mendelsohn was the other actor that was in there. So
He's gone on to huge things.
Yeah, he's doing really
seeing
well.
Him in Star Wars, and seeing him in a lot of stuff these days. What was going through your mind at this stage? Was it like, well, I was thinking I can do this maybe full time now. I can give away the sign writing gig. Or?
Oh yeah, by this stage I'd well given away.
You weren't taking on any quotes or jobs.
No. But we were up there sitting in the snow there one day, and I said, I've only just, started this career, but I think I've peaked already.
And that wasn't true, though, right? Because there's plenty more to come.
There's plenty more to come, but that was definitely a highlight.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you at any time move permanently to Los Angeles?
No.
I've never
actually worked in Los Angeles.
Okay.
I've been to Los Angeles, but not
because someone
there.
Said to me, "Oh, he's worked on." I guess when they
I've
say
worked Michael, in England, quite
right?
A lot,
when they say Hollywood films, it's not necessarily that you've been in Hollywood.
No.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So how did you maintain? So you continue to live in New Zealand while working on these blockbuster films. I guess that's the nature of the business; they can be filmed anywhere.
Yeah.
Were there any other locations, Michael, that you travelled to anywhere around the world?
Yeah, I lived in England for a fair bit.
Yeah,
and
you went back because you were there.
Went back there later. after The Last Samurai, I went back there for a
Did you work on that too? Years.
Yeah.
Because that was filmed in NZ.
Yeah.
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 That's
yeah,
right.
That was a long job too with Tom Cruise, and
that was a long film from
down in New Plymouth, Taranaki there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we had like they would bring over 1,000 Japanese soldiers. Well,
that's
they weren't
right.
actually real soldiers, but Japanese from Japan.
The extras, I suppose.
To be the soldiers. Yeah.
I guess the obvious question now would be, and I know I don't, because it sounds like the obvious question, but people in your position, I suppose, don't necessarily always answer it. But what was Tom like?
Well, no. I thought he was a really nice guy, and he was very professional. He would put coffee on for everybody, ice creams, baseball caps. He was very got a terrific work ethic, and
I've heard that
very professional.
Was he a bit of a hard taskmaster in terms of getting the job done? Because I understand that he is quite. Discipline in terms of schedule and
I wouldn't say a hard taskmaster. I'd just say that he is wanting to be a perfectionist and to work hard and expects everybody as you would do to put in to do their best, really, I suppose.
As the more we're talking, the more of these kind of big Hollywood titles you're dropping, Michael. So I guess give us some other ones that I've seen your posters, the Harry Potters and the Hobbits. But give us some other ones that you've worked on. Or is it too hard to think back on?
No.
How many have you done when you stop and think about it? Like, are we talking hundreds?
No, like a 30 or 40 or 50,
okay.
Maybe.
That's still a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some other big ones?
Some other big ones. I worked on, did some on the Harry Potter, did some on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
That's right, I saw that poster too. That was my favourite remake of that one with Johnny Depp.
Yeah,
it was very well written, very funny.
That in England, yeah. 30 Days of Night.
Yes,
with Josh Hartnett. And,
I'm getting confused. Yeah. Harrison Ford?
No.
Anne Hesh? No, different one.
Thirty Days of Night, which is it's like a vampire Alaska night one.
Yeah. Do you have to go to Alaska for that one?
No, we did. We did.
Where was that filmed?
That was all in New Zealand as well.
I thought you were going to say back in Queensland.
We went to the snow, but we also did build a whole town, and they made it look like it was Alaska and put snow everywhere. We did.
Yeah.
We did like 6 weeks of night shoots, starting at 5 o'clock in the evening and finishing at 9 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So doing that for 6 weeks was not that much fun.
Is that a cost thing, or is just the scenery in terms of the scenery and the conditions kind of match?
I think it was the clue was the film was called 30 Days of Night, so it was all night shoots. So
right.
They film it at night time.
Yeah.
To get that kind of realistic look. I mean, not always. You can do day for night, but it's probably not quite the same.
So. Yeah. And how many other locals or like Kiwis were working on the set as well at the same time? Is it like a big employer when a production like that comes to a country or a town?
Yeah, definitely. Because you have like all the local crew, you have the international crew as well. You have local actors, international actors. It does bring a good amount of money into the country for sure.
I asked about why that production might have been filmed there. John Seal is a Oscar-winning cinematographer from Queensland. He's in his 70s now, but he's worked on a whole array of films. But his big break was Witness with Harrison Ford. I think Peter Weir, another Aussie, directed that.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember John saying that the reason why Hollywood and production houses like the Aussies and the Kiwis is because they worked fast and they were efficient. Do you think that's another reason why Aussies and Kiwis get a lot of work on big... and he told a great story about how the Americans would say, we'll arc light that later and, add another million to the budget, where John said, no, I think if we knock on Harrison's trailer now and we get him the lights right now.
Yeah,
and as a result of that, they saved the studio millions of dollars. Do you think that's another reason why a lot of Aussies and Kiwis kind of get involved in Hollywood productions, because of their work ethic and the way they operate?
Yeah, I definitely think Aussies and Kiwis have got a great work ethic, and also like to get things done. You know, it's no good efficiently.
Yeah.
And I guess because we obviously haven't always had the bigger size budgets.
Yeah.
You know, it's you try and get the best that you can out of the money you have. So.
Yeah.
You know, and the crews have to be onto it, and you know, do a fast and efficient job.
Yeah, and so and at the end of the day, that was like I said, the
creativity. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
And a lot of it is also about troubleshooting. You know, there's always some little problem you've got to solve, so you've got to be on the ball and be thinking fast and go, oh yeah, this is an issue. Well, what do we do about it? How do we fix it? And how do we progress from here?
Yeah. And are you involved in that industry at all anymore, Michael, or are you kind of?
I did the last couple of years. I've worked on the first season of the Young Rock TV series, which they filmed in Brisbane.
Yeah.
So I was the key makeup in here on that.
Yeah.
And I also did the Joe Exotic, or Joe versus Carol, which was the remake of, well, the actor remake of the Tiger King.
Saga.
So I did all the tattoos for Joe Exotic and looked after Kyle MacLachlan, who was played Carol Baskin's husband, Howard Baskin.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's a great actor. I loved him in all the David Lynch Twin Peaks stuff.
He's the nicest guy.
We
got on really well. And that was a bit of a thrill of mine working with him. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll move on to your artwork and your other business now. But if the phone rings, Michael, and it's a job to do makeup on a set, is that still something that you do? Like you still go, I'll do that.
Well, I think you never say no, but you know, it would all depend on the job and the location and what was involved there. But yeah,
I know there's a big contingent, and the former drummer of Powderfinger, John Cogill, is one of them. Together with, I think, a producer from a reality US show, like Survivor, I can't remember his name now. But there's a bit of a groundswell on the coast in terms of getting the Sunshine Coast recognised and getting a bit of a film industry happening here, maybe a soundstage at Nambour. I know former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd is interested in kind of backing or pushing and advocating for that idea. So who knows? I mean, I know the Gold Coast has got, they've got a couple of sound stages down there, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. But up here, you know, I think it would be terrific. You know, you can never, because a lot of the time the studios, once they're booked out, you know, there might be a big film that wants to come in, but if they can't get a studio soundstage, then they'll just have to go elsewhere. And also the locations around here are so spectacular and beautiful, you know. It's a great place to work and film and live.
Now tell me about your, like I said, parallel to, you know, while this was going on, you still were drawing and creating and creating your art. And were you being commissioned by clients, and people were saying, hey, Michael, can you paint me something, this or that? Or were you just kind of creating and selling those? How did that work? How did that side of your artistic?
That side, really, I've just done paintings mainly for myself and for friends, and then I've had some commissions and all, but really I personally like to paint something, and then if someone likes it, then they can buy it then.
How would they see it? Would they see your work? Instagram these days, is that how it works? I know a lot of artists that I talk to,
I think Instagram's a big one.
That's
what's coming along. I've never really been too big on Instagram, but I'm just starting to get kind of progress into that world now.
Yeah. And do you want to talk about your business, the scalp pigmentation?
Yeah,
what's the correct name? The
Scalp Micropigmentation.
Scalp Micropigmentation.
Yeah.
Tell us what that concept is for people that have got no idea what it's all about. You showed me your office with and said, oh, that's a dentist chair. You said, that is a dentist chair, and this is what I use it for. So you just explain that.
Yeah, so it's kind of a progression from when I was working on films and TV shows, always did a lot of tattoos. And at one stage, on the Meg. I was working on the film The Meg, and we had Jason Statham, who was the lead actor there. We had his stunt double, and Jason's had facial stubble, quite a good strong stubble, and the stunt double had no stubble at all. You know, he was clean shaven and he couldn't grow a good thick facial beard stubble. So what we came up with this idea for the, like, similar to how we make the temporary tattoos for the arms and that, I did a beard stubble tattoo. So we did this.
That sounds very time consuming.
It is. Well, it's a lot of, you're drawing a lot of little hair follicles, and then you print it and put it on a tattoo paper, spray a adhesive to it, and then you can apply it to the skin, right, and then you seal it, and you can get it looking really good, so it can look like it's meant to be there. You know, it doesn't look fake. So we were doing this beard stubble on this actor's face, and it was like lots of little dots and little hair follicles. And then after that, we had a friend who said, "Oh, I've got a good job for you, Michael," because my wife was saying, "Oh, you know, Michael doesn't, he wants to spend more time at home. He's always going away and off to China and 3 or 4 months. It's not that ideal when we've got a small child and we want to spend more time together." So this friend suggested that have a look into the scalp micropigmentation. I think Michael would be good at that.
So this is this concept and idea already existed.
Yeah.
So just tell us then how you kind of tapped into that and to do what you're doing today. So you took that idea, or you were explaining, you know, how I guess easy it was for you to develop this this kind of stubble for the stunt double.
Yeah.
And then talk about the next, so then how did you tap into that and go, yeah, well, I might do that too?
Yeah, so then I looked into the scalp micropigmentation, and me being follically challenged myself, I thought, oh yeah, that could work, could give that a go. So then I looked into it a lot more and ended up going to Perth and doing a course. And I had my own head tattooed.
Right, but the concept is different to what you just described in terms of for the stunt double for that film. This is an actual tattoo.
Yeah, so this is the same as like a traditional tattoo,
right,
but we don't go as deep.
Uh-huh.
And we use a specific pigment which is designed not to go blue or green, stays like a constant shade of grey.
Okay.
Black.
So if someone wants to, and I'm assuming predominantly men,
Predominantly men, but ladies too, if they've got thinning hair or some female pattern baldness or areas where it's great to disguise the contrast between the hair and the scalp.
Right.
You know, and just gives the hair a thicker, more...
The perception of a thicker...
It's not a cure, it's a camouflage, really.
Yeah, but it's...
Disguise,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, and how many treatments and how long would the sessions be?
Well, generally, if for a guy who's got a completely bald head, we'd blend into the sides, and that's generally about 4 or 5 hours, and it would be like 3 sessions really is on the average. Sometimes you need 4, sometimes 2, but generally I always say 3.
This might be a silly question. Is it painful?
I've had little ladies who have been asleep in the chair snoring.
Oh, so it's not painful at all.
Not painful for them, but then I've had big rugby players covered in tattoos, wiggling around and squirming in pain. So it's just a lot of it is mind over matter, but it's also how sensitive you are to a little bit of pain, a little bit of a needle pricking your scalp.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some people don't like to brush their hair, so you know, scalp is that sensitive, then they may have a bit of trouble.
And Michael, would you be the only person in the area, in the region, in this part of the state that offers a service like that?
Well, I think I'm
because I've never heard of it before.
No?
I mean, this is all new to me.
Yeah. No, there's a few around.
What, on the coast or in Queensland?
There's a couple on the coast, and there's quite a number of them on the Gold Coast.
Right.
But there seems to be getting more all the time. But,
It's like most of these things that take off once, people go, this is... Then you hear more of it. But I hadn't heard of this before until the magazine, actually.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people still don't know about it.
No.
So it's starting to become more popular all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, another silly question, would it be covered, for example, by private health insurance, or is this kind of... Tell me a bit more about... just to kind of put people in the right...
I wouldn't really know whether it's going to be covered by private health insurance.
It's not something that clients come to you and say, if I got this done, would I be able to claim it on, you know...
Yeah, no one's actually said that to me, but, right. If you've got maybe if you'd had a burn or an injury...
Oh, yeah.
Or, I do alopecia clients as well.
Yeah.
Or scarring or something that you may be able to, but you'd have to, I wouldn't be the one to confirm that.
I'm not
an insurance expert.
No, I know. I get that, but sometimes, there are, I thought you might have had a case where someone's come and it has been for, I don't know what the right wording is, but if someone has plastic surgery and it's to cover a scar or something, then they go, okay, well,
I'm sure it's
covered.
Would,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure then you'd
yeah.
have a good chance, but I wouldn't want to be confirming that.
Well, look, it's fascinating. Thank you for having a chat today. I've loved, exploring a little bit about your lifestyle and your career and what you've done and what you've achieved and what you're doing now. You've got an awesome place out here at Doonan. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, just going back to the scalp micropigmentation, it's a great thing to boost people's confidence, especially for men and who've lost their hair. I've had clients who've, one client who would wear a beanie to sleep every night to bed because he didn't want his wife to see his bald head, I've had other clients who would, when all the boys are at the pub, then they're off to the nightclub, they would make a sharp right and go home because they knew if they went to the nightclub, they'd have to take their baseball cap off.
Yeah, So it's about it's just about that self-esteem
and
security and feeling comfortable.
That's right.
I suppose with their appearance.
And obviously then you can swim and it gives you a sense of freedom without having to worry about taking your hat off, or wearing a wig or a hairpiece or hair fibres or any of that.
Michael Creel was my guest on today's episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. If you enjoyed the podcast, please feel free to share it about on your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.